It's yeah, it's summertime. It's busy, and we're happy to share some of the wonderful arts events that are going on in this community. And coming up next weekend is the FinAm Festival. That would be the Finnish American Festival, which happens only every other year. So let's hear some music and put that on your calendar for next weekend, along with the Astoria Studio Tour, Art Tour, and everything else that's happening. And thanks for being here, folks. Vartina, and it's on a Green Linnet label, and they are quite wonderful. So they will not be here this year, but there will be good music. You can be guaranteed. Again, that's next weekend. Where, you ask? In Nacelle, of course, where all the people have Finnish names. So, my first guests are here with something entirely different. And Neil Akin is a poet and several other things. I jotted down an editor, a translator, although I'm not sure what he translates, whether it's language to language or what. But we're going to find out because Neil is here in the studio, and with him is Marianne Monson, whom many of us here know. Marianne is a relative newcomer, but she came in with a full sail and has established the Writers Guild. And that's why Neil is here, because he will be performing, presenting a workshop tomorrow. And they'll tell you about that as well. And welcome. Now, Marianne, you have been here several times, yeah?
Sure, yes. I love Cameo.
Oh, that's good. We'll get you in during pledge drive.
Sounds good.
Neil, this is new for you.
Yes, it is.
Have you been on the radio before, though?
I have, actually. I actually have my own radio show back in Portland called The Lit Fantastic, and it airs on KBOO.
Oh, gee, what a surprise, KBOO. I didn't realize that. Well, KBOO, I don't know whether you know, but KBOO was our mother station, is our sister station. Seriously, KBOO helped birth us. Wow. 35 years ago, but we're still talking about it. So. How long have you been doing radio?
About a little bit, close to 2 years now.
Oh, okay.
The first year was podcast. This year has been the year on radio.
On radio. How do you like the difference between?
We switched from a half-hour podcast format to a full-hour radio show. It's made interviews a little bit more interesting, a little bit more challenging, but we pre-record, so we have time to tinker with things.
Okay. Well, now you're live. So this is actually for you a virginal experience, KMUN, and being live on radio. So welcome. It's all over now. That was easy. So Marianne, I would like you first to tell us about the Writers Guild, and then also introduce Neil, because he's got a whole list of achievements, and I asked Marianne if she'll tell us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. So the Writers Guild is a nonprofit here. We host a series of monthly workshops, which is why Neil is in town visiting. And we also work with at-risk populations to promote literacy as a tool of healing. And then hold a monthly open mic night at Winecraft on the third Tuesday of every month.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
What happens at that?
We share work. We talk about plans. We collaborate about the difficulties of writing. Commiserate.
Okay. Nice to have
that
community.
Sort of thing.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
And you've had other people come. And
yeah.
Why did you know Neil before, or how did that come about that you invited him to be here?
Yeah. Yes, I did know Neil from, I spent 20 years in Portland myself. And so we met, I guess, about 6 years ago, I would say. Maybe a little less than that. Okay, you say three.
3 years ago.
It Time seemed flies. Like so long. Anyway, yes, we met in the Portland lit scene, and it's a small world there. Not quite as small as Astoria,
right.
But just really impressed and went to Wordstock together, did some different things like that. So I've always been impressed with the quality of his poetry and the quality of the human being he is. So just a great person and great writer as well.
Well, and I understand, I read, was it Philip Levine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yes. So he won the Philip Levine Prize for his first book, which is called The Lost Country of Sight. And then he also has a second book out of poetry called Babbage's Dream.
Which is beautiful.
Yes. They both just
held it in my hand. The first one is, what did we say, dog-eared? Is that the
well loved.
Well loved.
Well loved. I like that. Yeah. Well, okay, Neil. I would love for you to share some of your poetry, but give us a little bit of your background.
So I'm kind of an international transplant. I grew up in Canada, but also Saudi Arabia, Taiwan. Before returning back to Canada. My father originally taught English second language in universities.
Okay. I was going to say military.
Yeah, everyone assumes military, but no. He taught, and then he switched careers, became a professional librarian, and we ended up in Saskatchewan, Canada. And then I kind of have this weird hybrid background, which is what feeds into this particular book. My undergraduate work was all in computer science and mathematics.
Oh, my.
And I worked for a number of years as a computer games programmer. And then one day just woke up dissatisfied with who I'd become and realized there are times when you're good at something, but you no longer love it and it no longer sustains you. And so I left and I pursued a graduate degree, an MFA, and then a PhD in literature and creative writing.
Interesting.
And so I've been, my whole life, I've been trying to balance both the love for technology and the interest in language and in humanity.
So let me just ask you, since you mentioned that your father had become a librarian, I don't know how old you were by then, but I imagine that books and the written word have always been part of your life, perhaps?
Definitely true. Language, especially. My father grew up, he was English and Scottish descent, grew up in the Orchard Country in British Columbia. My mother is Taiwanese, Chinese. They each spoke five languages apiece.
Wow.
With only one in common, which was English.
Wow.
So I grew up surrounded by language, surrounded, both of them voracious readers, so I was surrounded by books.
Nice.
And it was not surprising to find myself, even as a programmer, spending my time reading poetry and trying my hand at writing and going to open mics and then gradually realizing that was the life I wanted even more. That was what was sustaining me
more. And the word translator is not so odd now that you've just given me a little of the background. I still don't know what it is you translate, but with that kind of, it's almost genetically given that you would be.
Yeah, I work in the past. I've done I've collaborated with a mainland Chinese poet who splits her time between Los Angeles and mainland China, and we translate contemporary Chinese poets into English, which is a daunting task. We're both bilingual; we both speak Mandarin and English, and we can lean on each other's strengths. She's a poet and a literary translator from English to Chinese, so she has that familiarity, and then I bring with me sort of a deep familiarity with English and a cultural familiarity and an intimacy with the language in Chinese that helps out. And so it's a good combination, although sometimes I feel like we're sprinting when we could take it a little bit more leisurely.
It sounds very rich, though, to me. From the outside, it just sounds deliciously rich that the two of you have this to, I don't know how you choose what material you're going to do, or...
One of the benefits of this type of translation is that since most of the poets are living poets, and she is an accomplished Chinese poet in her own right, she has this wealth of personal connections with many of the living major and upcoming poets in mainland China. And so she's able to basically get permissions to translate work that other people may have never seen before. This is a lot of the Chinese poets are desperate to have their work available outside of China.
So once you work on the translation, then what happens?
So
do you get it out there?
How do you get it out there? My collaborator Ming Di is incredibly adept at like finding publishers interested in these projects, and so she's wonderful at networking. She found the first major anthology that we did came out from Tupelo and Tupelo Press, which is a well known press, and we've worked on other projects, and then there's also an online. Well, it's a print/online journal called Poetry East West, which publishes, it's a multilingual international journal that translates from Chinese into English and other languages, and from English and other languages into Chinese.
So you write in English?
I write in English.
Do you sometimes translate your work into Chinese? Does that work for you, or...
I toyed with it at one point and realized I am terrible at translating my own work into Chinese. I thought at first it was just me. And at one point there was an offer came from some of the Chinese poets we had translated, and they had asked if I could send them some poems of my own that they would be happy to translate. And they emailed us back and said, these are too difficult. Can you send us something else?
Okay, there you go. Well, speaking of that, perhaps you could read us in English something of yours, if you have a backstory you want to tell us or not.
Sure. This is a poem from the new book. The book is called Babbage's Dream, and it references Charles Babbage, who was the 19th century mathematician who designed, partially built, but never finished what would have been the first computer. Mm. He was 130 years ahead of his time. Mm. So he had this dream, this vision of what he could build and his understanding of what it would mean, how it would change the world. And yet, by the end of his life, everyone had stopped believing that he would achieve it. And so this heartbreaking, like, obsession with building something, with a dream that's bigger than a lifetime, is what preoccupies the
Do people
book.
Know his name?
Computer programmers and engineers tend to know his name. Some people might remember a chain of computer stores called Babbage's that like, sold software and occasional hardware pieces.
Right.
But for many people, he's just kind of locked in as this disgruntled genius who never succeeds. You know?
I think we have a few of those rants. Okay.
So I'm going to read something that doesn't quite reference Babbage directly, but does play a different thread in the book, revolves around programming languages and taking terms that mean one thing to a programmer and a completely different thing to the rest of us, and trying to make the two come together.
My guest is Neil Aitken.
Encapsulation. There is always something that refuses to be contained. Small matters like fall, how it appears suddenly in the margins of our world, say, in the torn edges of a love letter, an unnamed city of desire buried in its blue ink scrawl, or the river gravel scattered at your feet, or whatever the wind wraps around a wrought iron angel at dusk. Something eludes our description of the world and its objects, the birds casting their long, fat shadows across the last traces of light, the rain, even the leaves in the fallow field caught between fire and gutter. Here another line forms, a procession of constants, a conduit of sorts that carries what it does not consider, the watery gray sky, the now brittle veins of summer. The earth overflows with the memory of itself and every incarnation of the dead, layer after layer, husk after husk. One life bleeds into another. Inside, the stones are fitted so precisely that not even a blade can find a home. It's not that we do not know the order of the world and its unmaking. There are methods here, secrets to be held, things we should remember and pass on by one name or another. We set our ears to the coldest wall, listen to the night like an old trawler sounding its way through the deep. Beneath us, the sharp bones of ships, the incessant thrum of waves.
Nice. I like the way you read, too.
Oh,
good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. What's going to happen in your workshop tomorrow?
So our workshop tomorrow, we're having a discussion and doing a number of exercises revolving around images, or around how to make in language, in words, an image that is persistent, that haunts the reader, that does more than simply depict something factually, but actually evokes a whole range of emotion and memory for the reader. So makes things come alive or sets things on fire in some way.
So let me go back to you, Marianne.
Sure.
If people have not yet signed up for the Do you still have room in the...
We do. We'd love to have them.
Okay.
Yes.
What do they need to do to
they
check
They just need
in?
To go to thewritersguild.org,
okay.
And then under workshops, they'll find Neil's smiling face, and they can click on it.
Okay.
They can email us at info@thewritersguild.org as well, and we'll get them registered if they're having a hard time navigating the site.
Okay, and that's tomorrow from 10 to 1?
That's right.
Okay, excellent. Right here in Astoria.
Yes.
And you'll get the rest of the information when you connect with them.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in. This is very exciting. And again, my guest is Neil Aitken. And the books, his first book, The Lost Country of Sight, and the new book, Babbage's Dream. And I'm not sure where you can find them. Do you have a website by any chance?
I do.
You can
go to www.neil, N-E-I-L, hyphen, Aitken, AITKEN.com.
Okay.
And the books are also available through Amazon and most local bookstores. Okay. If they don't have it on hand, you can request it and they'll order it.
That's the best. We like our local independent bookstores. Yay! Okay, thanks so much for coming in, Neil Aitken and Marianne Monson.
Thanks,
and the Writers Guild. Check it out, folks. And you are listening to Coast Community Radio. I want to give a big shout out. Thank you to Roger Rocco, who did a great show last week. I wish I had been able to see all of the things that were going on, but thank you, Roger. That was made me want to be there. I'm sure others as well. I'm going to give a try now for some music for the folks who are coming up next. We'll see if it works.
Well, I'm up every morning with the sun and the birds, and I'm on the bus. Got on a scratch pair of Ray-Bans, cause the world's just a little too bright. They're screaming and yelling, you know that cause such a fuss. I'm a little home over a little too full of life. I ring the bell so the driver can tell it's my stop, but I don't want to get off. I got a job selling people things they don't want on the telephone. And though my days are long and it's a really shitty job, I got a party waiting for me at my place when I in this old town that sits around alone at night, spinning them records off the wall. I'm the bartender and DJ of my own private honky-tonk. I like to dance across the floor till the downstairs neighbors call. In a week a day, so I save every pretty penny, but there really ain't that many I can hold on to. Must pay the bills to keep on the neon sign. But it's the first of the month and I ain't got the fun. Now my rent is due. Turn up the box, we gonna have a real good time. I'm the only one in this old town that sits around alone.
He's a bartender, somebody. I didn't catch his name. Is that one of you folks out here?
It is not. He's a bartender and DJ.
Ah, there you go, bartender. And that was the voice, very familiar voice, to those of you who listen to Coast Community Radio, of Brian Bovenizer, our operations manager. As you know, the funny thing is, it's playing. Is it going out over the air? Oh, it's just playing in my ear. I'm going to take it out. Oh, that's why. It's a good thing.
That's why you have the operations
manager.
That's
why he's in here. Actually, that's not really true. He's in here because he's a musician, but I wouldn't have been able to play that music for you if he hadn't been in here. And but my other guests are also musicians. Have you guys been on the air with me?
Not with you.
Mm-hmm. Not with you. Oh. We came on with Brian, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been on before.
Well, yeah. Well, you're not KMUM virgins, but you're Arts Live and Local virgins. So there, we got you anyway. So those are the voices of Gabrielle McCrae and Barry Southern, whom I think I first saw you at the Pickled Fish.
That's quite likely. We've been playing there for a while.
And I just loved what they were doing. And I found out they were the Horsenecks. Now, we got lots of horses around here now. And so you got to keep them, well, you don't really have to keep them straight because they're all good musicians. But today, Gabrielle and Barry are here for another reason. And I'm going to let Brian kind of give an overview of what's happening. This is tonight at the Labor Temple on Duane Street in Astoria. The show begins at 9, is that right?
It does. The paper said 10, so yeah. If you get there at 10, you'll miss my band, but that's okay, because the other two bands are what I'm really excited about.
Well, and Brian lives here, and his band does play once in a while here. So
once in a while. Yeah, we did the Labor Temple a couple months ago, and it was a hoot. It was a really, really good night, and we decided to do it again when Western Centuries was coming through. And Western Centuries is a trio of songwriters, Ethan
Lawton,
Kahalen Morrison, and Jim Miller. The first two are from Seattle. Jim Miller is from New York. And they're on tour right now supporting their new album.
So is that what we just heard?
That was what we just heard right there. And their bass player, Ngozi Fields, has played with the Horsenecks mm-hmm. in the past.
That's nice, yeah.
Okay. See what I mean? It all gets...
It all intermingles.
Yeah. How many people are actually in the Horsenecks?
Four. Yeah. Okay. Sometimes... we play with another, with a second fiddle player.
Okay.
Sometimes.
So and we also play sometimes just as a duo, just the two of us.
That's what yeah. I've seen, just the two of you.
Yes, yeah, so when we play at the Pickled Fish over in Long Beach, we usually do just a duo.
And we should let folks know that you are playing there tomorrow night and mm-hmm. Sunday night.
Yeah, that's and nice, Monday yeah. night. Three
oh,
nights.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And we'll actually have a special guest with us tomorrow. My sister, Joanna McCray, is coming out. She's a great musician, singer and guitar player. And it's her birthday tomorrow, and she's going to be playing and singing with us tomorrow night.
And where does she live?
Portland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Joanna will be there tonight as
She'll
well.
She'll be there tonight, too, yeah, because she plays in the Waysiders with us.
Yeah, see this?
It's hard to keep track of, I know.
and I've asked them to keep track of it, so I don't have to keep
yeah,
track
why don't,
of it.
Yeah, why don't you give us an overview of the night, Brian?
Yes,
just to set it all straight.
Yeah, there we go.
We started with Brian's band, that's Brian Bovenheiser and the New Old Stock. They're going to start it out. And then is Western Centuries.
Then we'll go Western Centuries.
That's the band we just heard with the new album. And they're visiting from Seattle and New York.
Yeah, the three songwriters. And then where's Ngozi from?
Ngozi's from Oklahoma.
He's from Oklahoma.
Lives in North Carolina.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah.
And they got great names, too.
Yeah.
I won't try
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and their songs are seriously one of my favorites. The Waysiders will be closing out the night. So it all starts at 9. It'll go until it ends. I had the honor of recording the Western Centuries band at Pickathon a couple years ago. It was my first real access to them, and they just blew me away. Since then, they have two albums. I play them on my radio show all the time, so they are actually one of my favorite, new country bands
yeah.
out there.
And that's Thursdays.
Yeah,
yeah Brian
definitely.
Leans to, he can play anything, but he does lean a bit towards country. Should just let you know. For those of us.
It's
who,
all folk, Carol. It's all kinds of folk.
Yep, and we are too. So, boy, this is quite. Okay, so I see you two mm-hmm. on the Waysiders.
Yep.
Yeah.
And who
the
else?
The other singer is my sister Joanna, who I just mentioned.
Okay,
so and she sings in the band.
Playing. Oh, no, that's just microphones.
Yeah, that's just microphones in the picture.
Right.
She sometimes plays guitar in the band. We switch off a little bit with fiddle and guitar. And then the bass player is Jamie Herman.
That's quite a face he's making.
Yes,
on
he's
this.
Got a really
he
good bass face.
Great.
And then Don Lawrie is our drummer. He won't actually make it. We've got a drummer from Portland coming out called Ned Folkerth. He'll be playing with us tonight.
Okay, because Don looks pretty serious. He may not belong here.
Yeah, but he's a big softy.
So how does this work in the music world? All of you are sort of mixing and matching. And what happens? How does this work? Do you learn from each other? Do you just jump in on some tunes, jamming, or how?
We all throw our guitar picks in a big fishbowl, and then we all pick them out again. And
and whatever's on the pick comes out in the music. That's it.
Well, you know, I mean, we all play the same kind of music, and you get to hear about other people, and it's good when people are moving around, like the Western Centuries are, you know, because they've been around a couple of times now. So, and Ngozi, who's the bass player with them, for a while was the fiddle player, the second fiddle player with us. It's a long story, Carrie.
I like it.
It all has to begin with a willingness to play without getting paid.
Yep.
Well, we're not getting paid.
I didn't tell you that part.
Yeah, right. He springs it on you on the radio, so you can't really back out too much.
We both had, both of our bands just had a willingness to support Western Centuries because they are on a national tour, and we both really believe in their music and want to pick them up.
Yeah. Nice. Now, so tell me, how would you, if somebody wanted to know, what is your music about, Gabrielle and Barry?
So for the Wayside is for what you'll hear tonight at the show?
You notice the way I asked the question. Yeah. It wasn't for this band or that band.
Yeah.
It's like, what is it you play?
Yeah.
I was at Country Fair last week, and I heard people, and I said, horsenecks are right in there. That's, that's the kind of music. But
well, I guess, those two different projects that we are part of have kind of two different approaches. It's all kind of based in, roots, American roots music, but... The Horsenecks are, I'd call us an old-time band, first and foremost. So it's, a lot of old fiddle tunes, really like square dance music.
And am I remembering correctly that you come from a long line of music, old music people?
Well, my family are musical, but they don't necessarily play this kind of music. They're pretty eclectic. My parents are more jazz and blues oriented.
Okay.
But I did grow up, singing with my sisters. And
that's so sweet.
Yeah, so we kind of focus on traditional stuff, that band. And then the Waysiders is more it's a lot of original songs and kind of a classic country approach, but not strictly. We do a lot of kind of early rock and roll, 50s sounding stuff, and a few kind of jazzy numbers. So it's a little more eclectic, and that's more electric, electric guitar, drums. It's more, upbeat dance. Honky tonk.
Try and keep it dancey.
Sounds good because there is room even. And actually, I've got it. I've got Walking That Line playing behind us. Oh, who wrote this?
I did.
I'm seeing your name all over here. Yeah.
Yeah, the album that we recorded is all originals except for one track.
Except for Ruth Brown.
Mm-hmm.
So you write music for this band. Do you write for Horsenecks too?
I've written a couple.
Yeah, there's a couple.
Yeah. But the majority
She's written for Hook and Acre. She has tracks with that band as well.
We're getting more. We're leading out.
The plot thickens.
Yeah. And if they're not playing somewhere, who knows? They may show up too. How do you feel about people jumping up on stage and playing with you?
Terrible. I'm hoping there's a security there tonight.
Barry, where are you from? Where are you from, boy?
Who wants to know?
I want to know.
I'm from Liverpool, England.
I rest my case. Okay. That tells all you need to know. Tonight at 9 p.m., come on over to the Labor Camp Temple. If you're busy doing something else, you can come at any time. I don't know how late that's going to go, but It'll go. So just come on over. Labor Temple is on Duane on the north side. That's the riverside, 14th Street around.
I think it's more like 10th Street. Because we're on 14th
Street. I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong direction. 10th Street, yeah. Holy cow. See, I've been back from Country Fair for only 4 days. The brain is still...
still recovering.
It's still untwisting. So, okay, so let's hear a little bit more of the Waysiders, and you'll hear the Western Centuries on tour. So this is the one that you won't get to hear much otherwise. And Brian Bovenheiser and the New Old Stock, my guests, Barry Southern, Gabrielle McCrae, and Brian Bovenheiser. Anything else we need to know, folks?
Bring your dancing shoes.
That's what I was going to say. Bring your dancing shoes.
There you go. Yeah, it's better than dancing barefoot and getting stepped on.
That's right.
It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It is.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you, girl.
That's the Waysiders, and you'll hear them along with Western Centuries and Brian Bovenizer and the New Old Stock tonight, 9 p.m. till whenever, and that's at the Labor Temple in Astoria. I have some bodies with completely different music here in the studio now. One of them is my go-to guy. That would be Carrie Lewis from the Astoria Music Festival, only it's over.
And yeah, we're not Astoria Music Festival
and
anymore.
Not.
We're just here.
Nope. They're here, and he brought somebody very new and special, the concertmaster of the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra. I'm not sure how you pronounce your actual name. I know I got your nickname down
right
really well.
Let's just go by the nickname, but Inyas could be the one pronunciation of the first name.
Inyas. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good thing I didn't try. Mm. Okay.
Ignatius. Ignacio.
There you go.
Or Nacho, actually.
Nacho. We used to have a program at Nacho Blues, yeah. Okay, Iggy Jang. That part's called Jang.
You know,
or Yang.
I think yeah,
you could
either or.
You are challenging. Yeah. No, you tell me what you say.
I'll tell you what what it is my parents are from Korea, so that's why it's a Korean last name. But then they moved to France, and I was born in France.
Oh.
And so people in France would say Yang or Zhang or Jang. So I didn't quite know. And my Korean is actually really bad. And I'm ashamed of telling my last name to my Korean friends because they tell me that I don't know how to say my last name.
Right,
so
right,
anything
right.
Goes.
I can see why Iggy and Carrie get along so well, though. They have a very similar sense of humor, clearly. So they are putting on an extraordinary concert this Sunday, that's the 22nd of July, in the McTavish Room, that's at the Liberty Theater, and it will be at 4 p.m. after the Sunday market is over, so you can get in. That's right on 12th Street, just south of Commercial, and I think it's going to be gorgeous. So
I think it's going to be the entrance that's off of 12th Street.
Yeah, on 12th Street.
Not the main corner entrance
right.
that everybody's
it's
used to.
On 12th Street, and there will be someone there with the door open, ready for you to just come on in, come on up, and to the very elegant McTavish Room. It sounds like this is a perfect place. Are you wearing tuxedos on Sunday?
I hope not. I mean, you know, there's this sort of stigma that classical music has to be serious and everyone's wearing tails and tuxedo uh-huh. and bow ties and things like that. And it still works very well as long as you enjoy the music. But I think the music matters more than what you wear. So I think Carrie told me to wear... What? What
jeans
did you tell me to wear?
T-shirt.
Not tails. Yeah.
Definitely. No, I'm sure you're in Astoria anyway. So where do you live now? Do you live in Hawaii?
Yes. That's how I met Carrie. I've been living in Honolulu for the last about 10, 20 years or so. And the first time I met Carrie, I forgot actually if I heard him play with, you know, he plays with essentially all the violinists in the world.
Exactly.
So I don't remember if it was one of those events or if I actually played with him, but...
Playing.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, quite possibly.
HPF.
And so I've, you know, he comes to Hawaii very regularly. Last time, I think, was with David Shiffrin on clarinet mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all those famous musicians. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a great honor to share the stage with him as well.
And are you here? Are you going to be traveling here?
Or? Yeah, actually, I play concertmaster with the Brit Festivals down in Jacksonville, and I've been doing that for a while. And this time, Carrie just asked me, hey, what do you do right before? And turned out I had a free week and just making some music together.
Wonderful, wonderful. Lucky us. Okay, folks, get this. This is And it's a time that is accessible, 4 p.m. this Sunday. So I have the program here, but I would like you to tell us what you're going to be playing.
Carrie's asking me to talk. That's all I've been doing so far. It's a mix and match of really violin, and piano repertoire that where both instruments play equal important roles. So we'll start off with, I believe, a Mozart sonata. Mm-hmm. You know, Mozart was such a genius. The word is when he wrote that particular sonata that he wrote the violin part, but the piano part, he was still sort of, it was still in his mind. He wasn't quite on paper yet. And I think the first time they premiered it, the ink was not only not fresh, it just wasn't there yet. and we'll follow that by a great Brahms sonata that was, you know, essentially this program is music of the 80s. So you have
right.
Mozart 1780s and Brahms 80s. I'm sorry, yes, 1780s. Yeah. Brahms is 1880s. And then we'll follow that by some virtuosic pieces for violin, Sarasate Carmen Fantasy, and I believe Carmen was written like also around 1880s. We also have some Debussy famous pieces, Claire de Lune, that was more like 1890s, but you know,
it's 80s, close 80s, enough. Close enough. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. and I understand the Sarasate. Is that how you say it?
Yes, Pablo de Sarasate. Yes.
Oh, I'm afraid I wasn't familiar with. Can you tell us about that particular piece?
Oh, so, that's flashy stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm
excited.
It's
very flashy stuff. It's where Carey sort of doesn't take a backseat, but let the violin shine and
just try to stay with him.
yeah, because it goes pretty fast towards the end, and but there's music of all tastes for everyone for this particular Sunday. Of course, the Sarasate will be sort of the showpiece that you know for the violin, but really from like they say, from farm to table, from beginning to end, there's things that everyone will be able to enjoy.
And I might add that hopefully you will be giving some commentate.
If you want me to,
some
I will. Yes, yes.
What is it? The commentation?
Yeah, color commentary like they do in
commentary,
sports.
Commentary, thank you. Yes, because, well, not while you're playing, but in between,
so. Okay,
please. Yes, because I'm always delighted. The audience, have you ever heard? But you've been in the audiences with Carey. I don't know whether Carey behaves the way he does here elsewhere. Does he get him, keep him laughing?
Let's not talk about Carey's behavior. But but yes, it always helps when performers can kind of enhance the performance with short comments here and there.
Yes.
You know, it's not like conductors, they hog the mic and they talk forever. But I think musicians, well, not that conductors are not musicians. Yeah,
you could be in big trouble. Be careful. I think you're safe today,
okay,
though.
Thank you
I
very
don't
much.
Think there's anyone here. So. So I wanted to play a little bit of this and then come back at you. What are we going to be hearing here?
This is the Mozart sonata, a little bit of the Mozart sonata. It's not us playing, it's somebody pretty famous that some people like her playing and some people don't. I know the pianist in this, Lambert Orcus, and he's just a wonderful guy, just a really sweetheart, and he's a wonderful pianist. Some people, Sophie von Mutter has some strange ideas about some things, but
oh, boy.
It's fun to listen to.
Okay, let's have a listen,
bit.
And, we'll
bit
be,
of Mozart.
And we'll be back with you.
Thank you.
That's the Mozart piece, and you'll be hearing something like it, only better. Oh, wait, did I say? So do join us on Sunday, 4 p.m. at the McTavish Room. My guests, Iggy, Jack, you know, part of the problem was, for some reason, I did see your picture, but you looked older in your picture. Or maybe you just look younger in person. I don't know. Whatever it is, I thought Iggy.
I thought your picture was pretty young.
Maybe I sent you a picture of 20 years ago.
Well, it's just that, you know, Iggy I think of as like Iggy Pop and all right. that kind of stuff. So I thought. But that's what I want to call you. So Iggy, Jung Young. And I liked your explanation, so we can basically call you anything because you're an international guy. So I heard that part. How did the music come about? Are your parents musical? And with all that travel in these different cultures, how did this come about?
Yeah, I mean, my parents did enjoy music very much. I think my dad went through the Korean War, and so did my mom. And I think music was sort of their safe haven and something they could enjoy in difficult times. So when it was time for them to have children, music was an important part of the education. Both my siblings, brother, sister, started to play the piano, and my sister's a pianist in France. So they, you know, so my whole family is in France these days, except for myself. So, and when it was time for me to start something, my mom asked me, and I said that I like the sound of the violin, because she would play recordings at home. So that's how I got started. So I don't know about Carrie, but you don't necessarily to have a wealth of family tradition of music making to become a musician. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, my father was a Southern Baptist preacher.
Is that true?
That's true.
Oh, my gosh.
And my mother was probably even worse.
Oh, my goodness. Did they have a sense of humor?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. There's an animal called Southern Baptist humor. Whenever Dorothy, my wife, hears it, she sort of says, oh, it's Baptist humor.
Oh, wow. I'm going to listen for it next time. But so there wasn't any music in your home?
My aunt was a music major. So.
Okay. Because I thought...
My mother played the piano a little bit. My father liked to diddle around on the piano.
So they weren't quite as strict as some.
Well, I had to be careful about reading the funny papers before we went to church on Sunday morning.
Okay. Carrie, when did you start playing seriously?
Seriously?
Seriously. Like when you were in high school? And
yeah, probably. I would practice on Saturday morning before my lessons.
Oh, wow. And not the rest of the week?
Not the rest of the week.
Yeah, I see. That's not serious. So, you were good enough to get by that. Iggy, how about you?
I started when I was 5, and it was pretty serious by the age of, I think, about 12 or 13, when you decide to go to a school
special
that really
music.
Specializes in music, right? So, you know, and you go through phases. I mean, I think up to 12, it was really good. But then when you hit your teens early on, it was rather difficult. Not that I didn't enjoy music, but I had a bit of a rough time with teachers and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure a lot of people can sympathize with that. But eventually you kind of get out of it and get out of your funk and find the true love of music and your own purpose and your own creative vision, I guess.
And decide to basically dedicate your life to it, too, in terms of professionally as well as for joy.
Yeah, you really feel dedicated to the process of music making, and it's something you feel strongly about, and you don't really necessarily go into music because you want to have a, you know, financially lucrative career.
I'm sure you missed my last guests where
I did.
Someone said... it all starts, Brian said, it all starts when you're willing to play for free. And Barry said, what? We're not getting paid? They did. They went through the whole act, you know. So, no, you don't Some people perhaps do, but that's not the motivation, certainly.
Right. I mean, it's a byproduct. I mean, you know, if you dedicate it to your work, and hopefully the financial reward or stability kind of comes along. But that usually the financial aspect is not the priority when you do music.
So in addition to the classical music that you're playing now, do you play other kinds of music at this point?
On the radio, I do, yeah. So, I mean, I grew up, in the 70s, 80s?
Yeah,
It was disco time and other things, and Motown, was maybe a little earlier. And, you know, in Hawaii, they all play
Argentinian tangos.
Right, so I've been doing a few, because in Paris, tango was kind of famous with Astor Piazzolla in the 80s, because mm-hmm. He studied there. So, I've been giving concerts, and next fall, too, with bandoneon, which is this sort of accordion that looks like that is actually the instrument for tango. So I've done those concerts. So, it's really something I feel quite passionate about. Mm-hmm. So it's good to kind of open your eyes and see what's out there. I mean, you know, living in Hawaii, you have the ukulele, which the Portuguese travelers brought to Hawaii. And it's nice to see all those different art forms for
did
music.
Did you intentionally go to Hawaii, or was that a job? Or
It was my work took me to Hawaii, the Hawaii Symphony, to play concert master. So that's how I ended up there.
That's a good motivation, I can imagine. Yeah. Well, I'm certainly glad you're here. And Carrie, as he knows, and as everybody knows, I'm always glad to have Carrie in the neighborhood. So their concert is this Sunday at 4 p.m. at the McTavish Room of the Liberty Theater. That's on 12th Street, just south of Commercial. It's the upstairs, the elegant room. And this is Iggy's first time playing in Astoria.
Correct. First time.
All right. This is great. Well, it won't be the last. We'll get you.
Hopefully not.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And I'm going to just put on a little bit. Oh, that's a different kind of music. I'll get that in a minute. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
I look forward to hearing you. And thanks to our silent partner, too. I'm not even allowed to know her name, but she's here. So if you're looking for her, this is the place. And now I do have some music from Rhythm Method, because they are playing music in the gardens at the Hoffman, and that is, I think it's a brand new album that they finally got together, and we're delighted. Congratulations to them. We've got lots and lots of theater going on here. The Barn Community Playhouse, It's Broadway Baby, NCRD, Love Letters, Astor Street Opera Company, Shanghai and Astoria. The Coaster has the musical of musicals tonight, and tomorrow night is Baskerville, a Sherlock Holmes mystery. Papa at the Fort Columbia Theater, Beauty and the Beast. That's five different theaters, productions going on right here in this neighborhood. Labor Temple, you heard about, that's 9 o'clock. And The Adrift always has music. Adams and Costello are playing at the Public Coast Brewery. Lots more going on tonight. And then tomorrow, the Peninsula Performing Arts Center is featuring Ara Lee at 7 p.m. in Long Beach. Here's one that you've heard about, and it's only once a year. Music in the Gardens. It's part of the Water Music Society from 10 to 4 all over the Long Beach Peninsula. And you can go online and check it out, or just head over there. 360-642-2507. It's a wonderful event. And Peninsula Arts Association, 10 a.m. in Long Beach Train Depot, is showing art Saturday and Sunday. The comic, the comics are happening at the Seaside Convention Center. Liberty has Pied Piper. This is all tomorrow. Missoula Theater, 3 p.m., and I think they have two performances. Fort Stevens Amphitheater, Storyteller Dan Overholzer, Astoria Library, 3:30, Mo Phillips. Sunday, Fort George, Left Coast Country. And Wednesday, the Hoffman is featuring Kathy Zoitlin's Living While Dying and the Repair Cafe, and there's so much more going on. Thanks for being here, folks. KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, coastradio.org.